Welcome to SDI Encounters, a podcast from Spiritual Directors International. I'm Matt Whitney. Thank you so much for listening. I offer a heartfelt welcome to new listeners and a welcome back to existing subscribers. If you like this show, please do click on the subscribe button. Here we offer a wide range of perspectives, stories, and conversations centered around community, spiritual companionship, and spiritual care. You'll find additional information, including videos, webinars, and digital publications at our website, sdiworld.org. This week I spoke with Dr. Ed Bastian, who is the founding president of the Spiritual Paths Foundation, which provides programs, books, and websites for the study of meditation and the application of contemplative values and insights in the world. He has a doctorate in Buddhist studies and Western philosophy from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and as a Fulbright scholar spent nearly a decade in monasteries in the US, India, and the Himalayas, studying Indian philosophy and translating Buddhist scriptures. Ed worked previously as a director at the Smithsonian Institute, where he produced the first interactive multimedia production with Lucasfilm and Apple Computer. He's produced award-winning television programs for the BBC, PBS, and the National Endowment for the Humanities. I spoke to Ed about a new media offering from Spiritual Paths Foundation, a website being launched called The Interspiritual Meditation, which can be found at spiritualpaths.net, that offers personalized tools and courses on developing your own spiritual style, which is a combination of learning about and drawing from the wisdom of many different spiritual traditions based on your own style of learning.
What I want to do is maybe begin talking about the Spiritual Paths Foundation, the website, but what I want to draw out from that is more of your story and how you came to this point. The website feels like a culmination of sorts of a lot of your experience and knowledge, wisdom, and study.
Well, I felt a mission, a passion, and a responsibility to try to help emerging generations of people to find meaning and purpose and a sense of who they are deeply and how they can connect with a grander reality than the challenges of daily life. And these are just natural human instincts and needs that in the past have largely been satisfied by people's participation in a specific spiritual or religious tradition. But today, at least a third, that would be more than 100 million Americans and lots of people from around the world, are now identifying themselves as being not aligned with any particular spiritual tradition. Sometimes they identify themselves as spiritual but not religious. And sometimes when they're forced to fill out a questionnaire, they check none when it comes to choosing a tradition. Mm-hmm. So, and the emerging generations, and many of us who are boomers and younger, have become accustomed now to use the internet as a primary source of information and discovery. And the internet now, through the websites and search engines like Google, provide an infinite amount of information that can be useful to people. And especially information pertaining to spirituality and contemplation and meditation. It's there, but the challenge is how to find it and how to find the authentic and reliable information. So we're in this sort of transition point now between the old media, which has been with us for hundreds of years, printed books, and transmission of spiritual teachings primarily through oral, face-to-face, small groups, And now the challenge is to be able to do it using the internet and the vast amount of information that's there. And so I've been working on ways in which to do that in a way that will be effective and will be authentic to all different kinds of users. And because of my experience with education, having started a school which was learning style based, that I felt compelled to try to help people find a path which is based on their natural predispositions, rather than trying to fit themselves, shoehorn themselves into the dogma of a given tradition. So helping people to begin where they're at, and therefore I've created a kind of taxonomy based on people's archetypal spiritual styles. And so people then will do an instrument to help them to recognize, to honor, and to harness, and to harmonize all the archetypal styles that reside deeply within them. For example, some people are now these days more following a path of nature. They find spirituality by being in the natural environment.
Yeah.
Some people will find it through art, through music, through poetry, through dance. Some people will find it by using their mind and reason and their intellect. And some people will find it through using their body, through walking, through Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, etc. Some people will find it through devotion and so forth. So there are 12 of these very general sort of families of archetypal styles to help people to begin. And then what I found as an educator is that maybe the best way to engage people educationally is to allow them, to encourage them to ask their big questions and to start from their questions, not start from where I want to start them, but start from where they need to start. Questions, perennial questions like, what is God? What happens when I die? Is that which I perceive in front of me through my normal senses real? Or how much subjectivity is involved in every perception? How much of the world am I projecting from the inside out? There are 12 of these families of perennial questions. And so I'm asking people then to choose a category and to state the question in their own words, to begin and to enliven their search, to give them the energy and the juice to drive their own educational process forward based on their ways of learning, their archetypal learning styles. So these are sites then to help people to develop their own path, to develop their own spirituality, and if you will, to develop their own religion that will draw on resources from the great spiritual traditions. And their religion may actually align with Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Buddhism, Hinduism, etc. Or because of the times in which we live, it's likely that, like most of us are doing now, it's going to be borrowing from wisdom and practices from more than one source. So the website tries to help people do that in a more disciplined, systematic way. So it's just not a willy-nilly, whatever appeals to me today kind of thing, but it's a gradual process where we find meaning and we use the journals that are provided to people in our website to journal about it, to write about what they're finding of meaning from different sources and how their practices are beginning to shape up for them. And then in the process, each person using the site would develop their own spiritual mandala, their own meditation mandala, which becomes their kind of private memory palace, if you will, which contains all the practices and wisdom that they found that are meaningful to them. And then they can store it easily in their own mandala and return to it and build on it and refine it over time. And then to engage with our fellow practitioners who are involved in practice circles to communicate and to support each other in the process. So in so doing, we build community of people who are developing their paths from around the world, people who are, you find that are participating in our courses from India and Asia and Africa and Europe, United States, South America, etc. So this becomes a universal, non-sectarian process to help people begin to develop their path from wherever they are, wherever they feel the right beginning point is for them.
So thank you for unpacking that for me. I'm interested in the methods that you have created, as you described, almost like creating your own religion. And I'm interested in that method that you have, this inner spiritual practice in which one is drawing from all of these different sources. And I think that there's a difference between, like, there's a sense, you, someone who's on the website and is going through this practice is not just like shopping for, you know, religious symbols. I think there's something deeper there.
Well, I think in developing this, you know, naturally what I've done is a reflection of my own experience.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, when I say create your own religion, I say that, you know, not in a sense that disrespects the importance of going deeply within a religion. Because I think just like when, if a person were to become a physicist, for example, they need to start with basic math. Right, they need to go through math and algebra and geometry and trigonometry and then gradually take courses in physics, and they lead up to the place where they really have a mature capacity to really be, whatever they decide to be, whether it's a cosmologist or a physicist or a neuroscientist. You need a certain background and a certain training. So what I'm not proposing that we just pick and choose willy-nilly of things that kind of turn us on and are interested, but that we seek wisdom, which helps us. And then privately, I hope that people will find a tradition in which they'd like to drill down deeper and begin to realize what's the criterion of knowledge within a particular tradition. Because only when you go a little deeper and have the opportunity to maybe study with a great teacher, do you really learn to know the criteria for really knowing something and really practicing something. And then as you do that, then it's easier, then you can branch out and see how other traditions do it, and you can add to your own. So I'm not suggesting that sort of egotistically, narcissistically, that people will just go about creating their own religion in that sense, but gradually they will be able to deepen into one, and then they can expand out and learn from others as well. That's my private hope. But not everybody's going to do that. The reality is that folks these days are just influenced by the internet. They're influenced by all the things that surround them. And so they're just going to, by nature, going to be borrowing, and they're going to be applying, and they're going to be experimenting. And so if that's the case, which seems to be happening, then I hope this site can help them do a better job at doing that.
I'm curious about your own path. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the practice here, the process of going through the sites and going through this interspiritual practice is one that maybe mirrors your own life. I know that you're very steeped in Buddhist tradition, and but I don't know if you consider yourself a Buddhist or an inner spiritual practitioner. Maybe you could speak about that a little bit.
In my own life experience, I grew up as a, I was baptized as an Episcopal. I grew up in a Presbyterian church and congregation, a very supportive community congregation in my hometown of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And at some point, I grew up, during the 60s, and then in the late 60s, I began questioning more and more the tenets of the faith in which I grew up, especially some of the more limited views of God as I understood them at the time. As the white-haired, bearded old man that was judging you and knew exactly how you were going to spend your life, and you really didn't really have any free choice. And that was the way I was looking at it. Since then, I've learned that's not necessarily the case for deep Christian practice, but that's how it seemed to me at the time. So I began exploring, and my explorations took me around the world, studying with teachers, and I also became a filmmaker. So I began doing films on different religions, working with the BBC and PBS. But one of my earliest films was with the Dalai Lama in 1970. And he was then, I was 26 and he was 35. And he was learning English. And I met him because I went with a well-known film producer. And so they thought that I was worthy of spending time with. And I was able to have a number of private sessions with him. And I so respected him and appreciated him because of his open-hearted, open-mindedness, his interest in, you know, my experience, the interest in the experience of young people in the West, his huge responsibilities of taking care of 100,000 Tibetan refugees in India, and the way in which he did it. This wisdom and kindness and compassion that he exuded. And I thought, this is a role model for me. I'd like to know what he knows. And maybe I can exemplify those in my own life. And so that led me then, at his suggestion, to go study with a great teacher, Tibetan teacher, who was on the faculty at Wisconsin. And I went there and did my PhD. In those days, there wasn't much translated. And so the best way to learn what the Buddha was saying was to learn a classical language. So I studied Sanskrit so I could read the scriptures. And I studied Tibetan, which enabled me to work in Tibetan language with great Tibetan traditions, teachers who were carrying on the oral traditions that had gone generation after generation since the time of the Buddha up until the present time. And I learned the discipline then of meditation and knowledge of a particular religious tradition. And that made me really, really appreciate what it took to be a mature Christian or Muslim or Jew or Hindu or Taoist or indigenous practitioner, that the depth that you gain and the discipline that you gain by working within a tradition, I found to be really important to me. Then I continued then after my PhD doing some teaching and working at the Smithsonian, but my Buddhism became primarily my inner practice, my inside practice, with doing some teaching. And when I moved to Colorado, I met Father Thomas Keating, who was bringing together, who, as most of your listeners will know, created Centering Prayer, which is a profound Christian meditation practice.
Yes.
And he was inviting great teachers mm-hmm. from many traditions of meditation to come join him every year at St. Benedict's Monastery in Colorado, to share meditation practices and experiences and methods. And we would all then meditate together in silence, and then we'd share with each other. And I learned so much about the meditative and contemplative traditions, you know, in the various religions, and gained incredible respect for it. And I began to think that maybe my main work would be not necessarily just to be a Buddhist teacher, but to work in this emerging field that we're now calling interspirituality, which would be to help people find whatever path is right for them. If it's Buddhist, great, might be helpful with that. If it's Christian, we have teachers associated with us that can help them with that, etc. So I thought, let me develop then a foundation, which I did. I created a foundation, the Spiritual Paths Foundation, which I started partly because I was able to sell an internet company that I had started, which gave me a little bit of money to start a nonprofit. So my goal was then to marry the process of spiritual growth, contemplative growth, with internet technology. So using my knowledge of the internet and my knowledge then of spirituality and my experience working with great teachers to then try to develop internet learning systems that would help people on their way. So for since 2002, we've been doing both in-person retreats, weekend retreats around the country at places like, you know, Esalen and Hollyhock and the Garrison Institute and Omega and many of these retreat centers. And then programs here in Santa Barbara, where I live now with La Casa de Maria, and then increasingly more and more online courses. So the online course that we have now is the product of, say, 50 years of my experience, and especially the last 15 years of working both with the internet and with spiritual practices. And as you said in your introduction, so the website is, in a way, a kind of completion, you know, that brings it all together into one site. And hopefully it now provides a foundation for further growth and involving more people in the process.
Yeah. And the website, my, you know, my experience of it is, and it's, you know, it's very intuitive. It's very gentle. It's very user-friendly. You know, all of these things that you've brought to it. But I want to ask you about your this journey that you've been on since your youth as an Episcopalian, and then moving into Tibetan Buddhism, and then into interspirituality. I imagine that hasn't always been like a gentle path of discovery, and I wonder if you've ever experienced any like obstacles or crises, maybe even in your youth when you were first hearing about God as this, you know, old bearded person who was casting judgment on people, and, you know, how you felt moved away from those symbols, you know, whether you ever met resistance, you know, either from your family or, you know, even from yourself. Like, how does one learn to trust, you know, one's own sort of divine intuition in terms of like what is true and what needs to be set aside? How did you develop that?
Well, thank you. I, you know, it was, I think, as you were alluding, there was a time in my late 20s after I'd worked with the Dalai Lama, and well, during that period, I felt a kind of a spiritual crisis. And I felt the need to find a truth, to find a practice, to be able to find a teacher, because I'd been dabbling with this and that. I'd been dabbling with meditation. I was having, you know, mystical experiences, which were profound. They were not drug-induced, because I didn't really believe in the psychedelic approach. And but nevertheless, they were unsettling. And I felt very vulnerable, I think. And so I identify with people who go through periods in life that may be when they're young, or it may be when somebody close to them dies, or it may be when they have a very bad illness that could be life-threatening. One can go through spiritual crises. And when you really wonder if the religion or the belief system you grew up with is sufficient, or if you begin to find others, does that mean you have to leave all that behind? And what are the consequences of that?
Yeah.
You know, let's say, you know, you grew up in a, you know, maybe a kind of a fundamentalist or pretty serious Christian environment where they would say, you know, it's only through Jesus. And if you don't believe in Jesus, you're not going to go to heaven. You just can't. So what if you take up other faith traditions? What is that going to mean for your own eternal future? So I did deal with a lot of that. And it was at times a bit of a crisis. And it's what moved me to try to find really good teachers that I could trust to study with and to learn from, not just Christian, but teachers of other traditions as well. And, you know, I have to say that through Buddhism, it's sort of like that phrase, you know, you need to leave home to be able to come home and discover it as if for the very first time. Mm-hmm. That by having left Christianity, in a sense, and gone into Buddhism, then later in life, and now I find it's much easier for me to find a home within Christianity as well. Mm-hmm. I find that what I learned from Buddhism and working with teachers from, you know, Sufism and Hinduism and all the different traditions, native traditions, that the deeper levels, say mystical contemplative levels of Christianity, resonate with me a lot more now. I wasn't ready to hear them or even recognize or know that they were there. But now I can. And so I've found that by this kind of open-hearted exploration of different traditions, that it's made me actually more comfortable in the religion of my birth. Hmm. So I think and you know, our life, our spiritual process, in a way, is endless. And if the Hindus and the Buddhists are right and others that we have more than one life, this could take many lifetimes. So in this life, we need to use the time available to us, this precious human life where death could come at any moment. We need to use it well to try to find that spiritual center, which can really hold us and guide us and keep us as we go through the challenges of life. And the ones that we find now, today, at this stage in our life, this year of our life, may morph and change and mature. And so when we look back on it 5 years from now, we can say, oh, that's where I was then. And look at how wonderful it is, how I've evolved, and how all the other traditions have helped me to evolve in the firming up or the developing or maturing of my faith or my practice, say within one tradition, you know, perhaps the one in which I grew up. So, yeah, so I think it's this long process for me has made me comfortable to say I am interspiritual. You know, I'm Buddhist, I'm Christian, without any sense of contradiction or that any fear for my immortal soul, you know, or damnation, or now even psychological unrest, you know, from having done it. But it's been a long, careful, pretty thorough process. And I guess that's what this new website is going to try to do to help people. In the olden days, to do the search, this sort of hero's journey, as Joseph Campbell put it, where a young person would go away from home, they would encounter great teachers, and they would learn, and then they would gradually put it together for themselves. You would have to go across seas and across deserts and over mountain ranges and in order to do that, right? Because these traditions were all locked away in their own cultural context. Yeah. Now we're surrounded by them. Our country is this most diverse, pluralistic place that's ever been in the world. So we have an opportunity now to learn from these marvelous, diverse sources and traditions, you know, to develop our path in a way that was never possible in previous generations. So now we just need the tools to help us do it, you know, more efficiently, more reliably, and that's what we're trying to do.
You mentioned the Dalai Lama, which is I imagine a nice teacher to have, but who are some of the other teachers along the way, along your journey, that encouraged you to partake in this exploration, to go on this adventure, who pushed you on your own path, right, to take those first steps?
Well, you know, when I began sort of the active search, I began meeting. This is back in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. You know, one man that I met back then was Rabbi Zalman Schachter, mm-hmm. who passed away a few years ago, mm-hmm. who had started the Jewish Renewal Movement, but who provided a way for young Jewish people who were moving towards Buddhism and Hinduism for their meditative practice to see that those practices existed within Judaism. So that was sort of the Lotus and the Jew, the coining of the term Jubu. And I studied with other great, I went to the monastery of the desert, you know, near Abiquiu, and I stayed there and studied with the abbot there. I went down south and worked as a civil rights activist for a while, where I was encountered great teachers who were Black preachers who were leading the civil rights struggle and using the stories of the Bible to enliven and to strengthen people as they sat in nonviolent, passive resistance, facing the fire hoses and the dogs and the clubs. And the work of James Lawson, who had worked in India, learning the wisdom of Gandhi, and which he brought back to teach young Black people then the techniques of nonviolent resistance. And then, after the Dalai Lama, and I did my PhD, I minored in philosophy and worked with great philosophical teachers. And when I lived in India as a Fulbright Fellow, I studied with other great Indian Sanskrit teachers on Vedanta and Jainism and the other great traditions of India. And then my own teacher at the University of Wisconsin was a great, great scholar and practitioner. Geshe Lhunab Sopa was absolutely essential. And my teachers at the monasteries where I lived in India were incredible role models. And then when I started Spiritual Paths Foundation, I invited, over 40 great teachers to be part of our programs. So I learned from them as well, from Rami Shapiro and from Kabir and Camille Helminski and from Zalman Schachter and from Father Thomas Keating and from great, meditation teachers of Buddhism and Hinduism, Swami Atmarupananda and so many great teachers that were part of our program. So they all became teachers to me as well. So the interspiritual meditation and this whole process which is the basis for the online courses evolved from my work with them. So it was really born of that deep work with all of these great teachers. And it's been a gradual development, obviously. But I've gained so much by working with all these great teachers. I'm sure names that I'm not thinking of now, but many others.
Thank you. So SDI, we advocate for spiritual direction, spiritual companionship. How can your website be a tool or a place for spiritual directors or spiritual companions to kind of go deeper in their relationship, in each other's spiritual journeys? How can the interspiritual mandala be of use in that kind of relationship?
Well, the methodology, the form, the tradition of spiritual direction has a long and extraordinary history with great teachers, great people that are called spiritual directors or spiritual mentors. And this process that we're developing and trying to mature now recognizes the fact that as a spiritual director or mentor these days, we are going to encounter people who are not necessarily Christian the way in which we thought of Christians or Jewish the way we thought of, etc. But they're going to be, by their nature, spiritual but not religious. They're going to be seeking in more than one tradition. They're trying to put it together for themselves. So the methodologies of, say, of traditional spiritual direction obviously are going to need to morph with the times. and techniques and processes and methods to help people who may not align with the way in which we thought spiritual direction or formation would have proceeded 20 years ago, has got to morph and got to change now. So these tools, the processes that we are working on, and they're by no means fixed. This is not a new dogma. This is in its of itself an experiment. Because we're doing our best to experiment and learn and develop processes and methods for our times that will help people be helpful to other people. So this is not something that people would walk lockstep into and say, I'm adopting this methodology as opposed to my traditional spiritual direction methodology. It becomes like another tool, you know, an ancillary tool, an adjunct that people might be able to use that might be helpful when they're trying to help others develop their own spiritual paths.
And one of the things you said earlier, just about the meditation mandala that one develops and comes to as a result of being on this journey, is that also is not a static mandala, that it's contingent in a way, actually in a fundamental way, that you come to a place and it, where you have pulled together a methodology for spiritual practice that works today, but that we're always changing. We're always being led into new discoveries and new understandings. And so that methodology also has to change too. And so I imagine that for all of us, having somebody, having a community or having a spiritual companion to listen to us, to help us to articulate that journey and that changing, becomes paramount, especially as you said about the spiritual nones, the NONESs, who don't necessarily have a faith tradition, but have this deeper calling, this deeper sort of hunger for meaning and purpose. You know, what is life about? What is God? What is the divine? You know, is there such a thing? Is this, you know, this being this present moment, all there is, you know, or is there something even deeper to this present moment than I can even know? Sort of, I guess what I'm describing is this journey, this process of exploring, you know, one's spirituality and how symbols and religions and ancient wisdoms can speak into this. But I think that there's also something deeper and something resonant that runs through all of those traditions. And, you know, as you say, like, you feel, or you're in a place where, you know, your Christianity and your Buddhism and your interspirituality all sort of comprise who you are, and they're compatible. They're not incompatible, but there is a thread that runs through all of those, I think. Maybe you could speak to that a little bit. And I've heard it called perennial wisdom, which is probably something you know about. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
There's a, you know, I think that there is a tendency, and I've explored this with all the teachers with whom I've worked, to want to make a grand overarching statement such that, like, all religions are fundamentally the same. They come from one and they go to the same conclusion. That many, you know, one ocean, many tributaries. You know, one God with many names. What I found is that sounds good, but nobody knows for sure if it's true. And the people who I've worked with in the various traditions sort of echo that sentiment And in a sense, as we say that sentiment, we are overlooking the marvelous diversity that exists within each. You know, diversity is really all we know for sure. We know that biodiversity is required for the health of any ecosystem. We know that any individual member of any species would not exist without the diversity of other species that surround it. That there is this radical interdependence and reciprocity that exists in the natural order of things, and that religions themselves are the result, although they may have had a founder that received wisdom from a god or from Allah or from Brahman, from some external higher source, the religion itself formed in relationship to the diversity of other systems around it. Right? So no religion is an island in and of itself. So to me, the where we're moving toward is a respect for diversity and honoring the diversity, both as individuals, as human beings, racially, ethnically, gender preferencely, you know, in all ways, learning styles, spiritual styles, that diversity is the one thing that we know for sure. When it comes to what do we have in common between religions, I found the profound workers, teachers with whom I work generally agree that let's don't start with the metaphysical premise that all is one, that all gods are the same, that all the endpoints of all religious practice is the same. Let's don't start there. Let's start by looking at what we have in common, and in our work, particularly the processes that we have in common. So we look at spiritual development as a process. We look at contemplation and meditation as a process. Not everybody doing one type of meditation so they can all reach the same Satori, the same Nirvana, the same, you know, Christ consciousness, the same.
Yeah.
So the interspiritual meditation evolved out of that. And it's a process-based approach. So we begin, there's seven parts of it, seven steps that I've learned in working with all these teachers and looking at these traditions. These seven steps in this process exist in all the different traditions. So if we move as in a process with each other, honoring how each of us are going to deal individually with that process, but we can move together in process with each other. So may we be happy and healthy is the first one, our motivation, just a motivation of where do we begin? Where can most people begin? Mm-hmm. Well, we all just, as the Dalai Lama said, every human being, you know, what we all have in common is we want to be happy. We want to be healthy. So we begin there. And then we begin examining as an education process, what does it take to be happy and healthy? What does it really mean? You know, does that rise from within or does it come from external? Does it come from, you know, the sensuality and the experiences and the possessions of the external world, or does it come deeply from within ourselves? And if so, how can we create deep internal happiness and health that will exist within us no matter whether we are suffering from a disease or not? So we begin with where most people can begin. Then, and then if you look in the prayers of many, many traditions, they say, may all beings be happy and healthy. We're praying for the well-being and happiness of all, for the health of all. So then we move on to the second step, which is may we be grateful. So gratitude is a key part of any development of any spiritual process. Grateful for the great teachers that have given us the wisdom of the ages. Grateful for the environment that provides us with what's needed for us to survive. Grateful for our families, our parents, for our role models. Grateful even for the difficult things in our life. because they give us compassion and wisdom to help others and to help ourselves. So may we be grateful is the second step. And the third is may we be transformed. And in this precious life that we have, let us set before us a truly profound goal of what we can become. What is the highest potentiality of this life? And there we can use role models, you know, from, say, a religion we identify with Jesus as a role model, or Mary as a role model, or the Buddha as a role model, or Muhammad as a role model, or, you know, or. And they exemplified the qualities that we wish to exemplify in our own life. So may we be transformed into that. And may this meditation help us in that process. And then fourth, may we be loving and compassionate. Love and compassion are generally regarded as the doorways into a profound spiritual practice. So we begin to think about love, reciprocity, and all the ways in which we can feel either some divine love, some spiritual love, or actualizing love to even the difficult people in our life. And the next step, number five, is may we become mindful so that we can observe the inner workings of our mind. We can observe the objects that influence us of our perception, that we can find calm, we can find tranquility, we can find equanimity. We can have this capacity then to observe and to be calm so that our minds and our spirits can go deeper to achieve a greater wisdom, which is number six, may we become wise. And here, the wisdom is going to be unique in a sense to the individual and say the affinity that they have for a specific tradition. So it might be, may we be wise, which might entail some sort of gnosis, some sort of sophia, some sort of prajna, some chokmah, some hikmah, the terms that come from the various traditions, each of which deal with a specific kind of wisdom, maybe a unity, maybe a non-dual, maybe it's emptiness, maybe it's interdependence. But in that, we develop this sort of direct perception of that which is true that emerges both from deep within our own, the depths of our own consciousness and our own potentiality, but also from the wisdom of the teachings that have influenced us. And the seventh step is may we be in service to all. So then we begin to imagine the coming day, the coming week, the challenges that are going to present themselves to us, the people that are going to be difficult to us, you know, the areas that are going to test our spirituality and our love and our compassion and our equanimity. And we imagine those, and then we imagine bringing this meditation into each of those moments. So we preload all the challenges with our meditation. And then when we walk into the day, as those begin to emerge, here's that difficult person. Here's that person honking at me. Here's this person cutting in front of me in the checkout line. Here's this and that. Those become opportunities and gifts that we can apply our meditation to. So that way, our life in the world and our life on the cushion, so to speak, or in our meditation practice, become unified with each other, interdependent one with the other. So what I found is that those seven underlie contemplative practices are processes that you find among all of these different traditions.
Yeah.
And so therefore, interspiritual meditation is process-based. It's not telling you what to believe. It's not making you dogmatically go lockstep, you know, in doing the meditation just the way I tell you to do it. I'm not the guru. I'm a mentor. I'm trying to help you with a process. I'm trying to help you to be responsible for your own spiritual life and to mature and to refine it and find satisfaction and happiness and all the qualities that one wishes for in a true contemplative practice or meditation practice.
That's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that's what a spiritual companion is someone who is not a guru or an expert, someone who might have some wisdom, but somebody who is just listening to someone find their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have one final question for you that relates to that. And it's your number three, which is, may we be transformed. And somebody who comes to the website, the Spiritual Path website, is probably seeking transformation, although maybe they don't know that yet. But obviously, one enters that journey, that spiritual journey, that spiritual process, you know, from a place of discontentment, right? Thinking or just feeling that, you know, there's something more I need to learn, something more I need to grow into. And in order to transform, one has to destabilize and leave behind things that are formed. And that can be really intimidating, scary. And so my final question is, what encouragement might you offer somebody who is beginning that journey? Somebody who maybe is rooted in a particular faith, feels hungry for something more, but the idea of leaving what they know behind is scary, intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, and I know, and I don't want to underestimate the kind of stress and difficulty and crises that people can go through from a spiritual perspective. But I think that when somebody is in it or feels the need, then to see that as a great gift, a great opportunity to be able to engage in the greatest adventure that life has to offer, which is knowing oneself, which is knowing the essence, the truth, the meaning of one's existence. So the crisis that can come in various ways and from various reasons then becomes a great gift. And so use that then as a motivation to say, okay, great. I'm now going to just begin because it is a long process, and patient process of discovery, of exploration. And I'm going to learn from great teachers, and I'm going to use the websites, and I'm going to use friends that I respect, and I'm going to inquire towards developing my own spiritual path. And then in that process, one will discover people that offer really quick solutions. Follow me, and you will get immediate satori. You will get immediate enlightenment. You will, you will solve all your spiritual longings and yearnings. Yeah. Or you may find people that say, this is a process, and it's gradual, and this is a lifelong adventure. So that becomes a process of one's own discernment, because inevitably somebody's going to try to find the quick path. You know, they're going to be lured by a guru or a teacher that says, you know, follow me and pay the money, sit here, you know, do my retreat, do my this and that. But oftentimes what one finds is that it really wasn't the quick path for me. Maybe it's good for them, maybe it's good for a few people, but it didn't really work for me. And so then what happens is that one becomes discouraged and begins to doubt the possibility that one can ever develop a spiritual path, because we've had a few bad experiences along the way. There was something wrong with the teacher who said they were a guru, there's something wrong with the teaching, or there's something wrong with me, and I'll never find it. So I think, you know, inevitably there are going to be those moments when we are more desperate and we will like cling to something and try to make it work as a self-sufficient way that's going to work for me, and then I'm not going to have to deal with it anymore. And perhaps for some that's going to work for a good deal of time, and perhaps forever. But my experience is, for most people, even when you find that, this doubts are still going to arise. This still, it comes back to one's the responsibility that one has to take charge and to engage in the process of discovery and exploration and finding it and discovering it, and treat it as a gift, as a fun, as an exploration. And so hopefully the kinds of things like we're doing will help in that. May not be self-sufficient forever, but hopefully it'll be a gift along the path to help people engage.
Yeah.
And be glad about it and have fun with it. Yeah, which is the way it is. That's my nature. Is that, hey, this is great. This is who we are. We're human beings. This is part of what we're here in the world to do. You know, we're here to find meaning and purpose and some sort of truth for us. We want to pass that on. We want to be good human beings. We want to be good to our kids and the people around us. We want to make the world a better place. And having a spiritual path is really going to help us do that. So let's just get on with it. Enjoy it.
Yeah. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Joy is the word that I was thinking of all of that. It's a practice, yeah. Practice of joy.
Yeah.
And so for those who are listening and are interested in a fun way of starting this path of discovery and exploration, well, Ed is somebody who has walked this path and has poured his knowledge and wisdom and time into this website, spiritualpaths.net, right, is the URL.
Yep.
So definitely check it out. So yeah, check it out. And Ed, thank you so much for your time today, for sharing about the site and your work with Spiritual Paths Foundation and something of your own journey. I think just hearing that is enlightening and encouraging, I know for myself. So thank you so much.
Oh, Brad, it's been fun being with you. And yeah, may we continue. It's great to be in this partnership with you and Spiritual Directors International. And, you know, it's going to be a fun adventure, just working it together. And yeah, looking forward to all of it. Thank you so much for having me.
I recommend you take a look at the spiritualpaths.net website. I spent some time on there creating my own profile and logging in. I took a survey, and who doesn't like taking interesting surveys, which generated a spiritual styles profile, which revealed which styles I most resonate with. So examples of spiritual styles include nature, wisdom, meditation, the body, imagination, and big surprise, I scored high on arts. And then once you fill that out and receive those scores back, you're given the opportunity to write journals, which have question prompts based on those explorations. I can go back and read those journal entries later, or I can download them as a PDF, which I can then read for my own meditation, or I can share those with a spiritual director or a spiritual companion. The website also uses a custom search tool based on my spiritual styles profile, which returns curated internet websites and resources, which provide further learning and contemplation. The site has online communities that you can connect with, and even personal mentors who will connect with you one-on-one if you so choose. So if you're someone perhaps like me who wants to go deeper in one's own faith tradition, while also learning about the resonances between other faith traditions, that perennial wisdom, then this website is a really amazing tool. Or if you have no faith tradition that you grew up with or in, and are seeking ways to better articulate your own sense of the spiritual, the website is also a great tool. Or if you're just curious about spirituality, intellectually curious, or for whatever reason, it's a great learning tool. So I highly recommend it. It's spiritualpaths.net. Go check it out.
This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day. And may you share blessings and peace to others.